might be my first time, like, and I've been at a few of the other ones. I'm not 100% sure. My name is Leslie Payne. I'm a first-time counselor in Nelson on the unceded territory of the Tsanax people. And happy to be here.
Welcome, Leslie. Happy to have you.
Well, I have my camera off, so my apologies. As soon as I get through that, I'll come back in full force, but I'm completely attentive.
I am certain that you are. So it seems like everyone else has been here before. So,
hey, Arjun.
I'd like to introduce our speaker today. So, Will Cole Hamilton is a counselor at the City of Courtney. He's the vice chair of the Comox Valley Regional District. He chairs the Climate Caucus. Co-chairs the Comox Strathcona Waste Management Committee. He's a director at the Union of BC Municipalities, UBCM. He's the member of the BC Caucus for Federation of Canadian Municipalities, FCM. I'm saying part of this for Leslie's sake as a new counselor. And my notes are on my phone. He chairs Help Cities Lead, which is part of what he's going to be speaking about today. So welcome, Will, and thank you for taking time out of that really busy schedule to come and be a mentor to us. So over to you.
Thanks, Kate, and it's an absolute pleasure. I love the BC chapter meetings. It's like getting together with coffee with friends, so it's delightful to see you all today. I am going to share my screen and kind of give a brief kind of overview of Help Cities Lead, what it was about, what we've done, and kind of where we've got to so far. And I think that a number of you are from municipalities that endorsed Help Cities Lead, and you should have received a report back letter from us to your councils in probably about 2 months ago. So hoping that that was received by your staff and then passed on to you. And at the end, I can just drop that letter in the chat if you haven't had a chance to see that. Maybe I'll actually just do that right now because it's a useful reference if anyone's just wanting to check in on things while we're going. So I'm just going to see if I can just drag and drop that into the chat. Yay, there it is. Okay, excellent. So this is a good thing to refer to if I'm not getting into enough detail in the presentation. All right, so now I'm going to attempt to share my screen, and here we go, share, and is it coming up as full screen, or is it coming up with, like, all the kind of extra bits and pieces? Let me see if I can get into a presentation.
It's extra bits and pieces, yeah.
Extra bits and pieces, okay. It's not view, it's slideshow for beginning. Okay, there we go. Okay, so, the Help Cities Lead was founded in 2019, and I became involved in it in 2020, primarily because I've been involved in PACE BC on the steering committee of that, and I knew that PACE was a big focus of Help Cities Lead, and it's an educational and awareness and fundamentally an advocacy program. Our objective was to be lobbying the Governor of British Columbia to make a set of 5 policy changes, which I'll go through in a second. And we've had the strong support of Climate Caucus all the way through, and that's made a huge difference in terms of being able to reach out to local governments to gain support. So, as you probably all know, buildings are responsible for 40 to 60% of community GHG emissions for local governments in BC. So it's the biggest piece of the puzzle, and something which we would like the capacity to deal with more. The government of BC has set ambitious targets for itself for the building sector, 59 to 64% by 2030 reductions, which is significantly higher than the overall GHG reduction goal of 45%. Local governments want to do their part to achieve this important goal, and we've just been needing tools. And so what we have been asking the province for is 5 specific things. 5 things that they can help us with, because as you probably all know, that we only have the powers the province chooses to give us. So if we want the authority to do things, we have to go and ask. And the five things we wanted was a PACE program. I think probably a lot of people are fairly familiar with that. We'll get into that in a bit more detail in a second. Mandatory home energy labeling, the ability to regulate climate pollution for new buildings, for existing buildings, and building energy benchmarking, so you can just keep a track of the work that you're doing and how it's proceeding in your community. And just goes through them sort of one by one. PACE is essentially a long-term, easy to access, low interest loan against the value in your home, which and you can gain funding easily for a set number of prescribed changes, like the installation of heat pumps, improving to the building envelope, things like that. As you can see, it's been very successful in the United States and been responsible for billions of dollars in capital projects and creating an awful lot of jobs. And I think that's one of the co-benefits we tried to stress, is that work being done in your home is not something that can be offshored. It needs to be done in your community by skilled people earning good wages, doing work that they can go home at the end of the day and feel great about. It's been supported by UBCM resolutions in 2014, 16, 17, and 19. In 2022, there was a resolution supporting everything that we're doing at Help Cities Lead, so that also endorsed PACE. And I just put in another resolution from the City of Courtney to ABICC, asking the province to sort of, pardon the pun, but to pick up the pace on getting this in place. And it was in the ministry mandate letters in 2020 for energy, mines, and low carbon innovation and municipal affairs. And unfortunately, it is not in the 2022 mandate letters. It has disappeared. We'll get to the current status of PACE in a second. This is just kind of the background for our asks when we started. Mandatory home energy labeling. This is, this is critical so that homeowners can know what they're getting, what the efficiency at the home is going to be. And it's also, I think, really important because it means that if you invest in your home, in the building envelope, and in heat pumps or other kinds of heating systems, you can recover that cost, because the buyer is going to know that they're getting something of value, and that helps to incentivize people to make those changes, knowing they'd be able to recoup the value of that as when they eventually sell their home. This is also not included in the 2022 mandate letter. There has been a less of an explicit focus, certainly, in EB's government. Regulating climate standards for new buildings, this wasn't something that was possible, but as we're going to talk about in a second, it is, as of May 1st, going to be possible in British Columbia, and we're certainly very pleased to see that take place. It was remarkable that up until now, we did not have the capacity to regulate GHG emissions. The STEP code, the Energy STEP code, which I think we're all pretty familiar with, is actually completely neutral as to the source of fuel. So it's all about efficiency. And so, as it turns out, a step four house under the Energy STEP code, using natural gas heating, is produces four times as much GHGs as a step one house using electric. So as you can see, the source of heating is really just far and away the biggest single piece of the puzzle here. And some communities like mine have been doing a workaround where if you're allowed to incentivize, you can't require people to put in low GHG systems, but you can incentivize them. And so we incentivized by setting parameters that would really allow only for an electric heat pump. And if you were to do that, then the construction could be to one step lower on the STEP code. So it's a bit of a trade-off, allowing builders to save a bit of costs and effort on the STEP by going one step lower on the STEP code, but achieving like the fundamentally much larger goal of changing the fuel source for the house. Then regulating GHG standards for existing buildings, and existing buildings are a very large category because they are all the buildings that are currently in existence in British Columbia. We were wanting for local governments to have much greater authority over the kind of retrofits required for existing buildings. And then we have the building energy benchmarking. And again, this is an important way for to be able to track progress and direct policy and programs to follow that. That was also supported by UBCM resolutions and by an organization called Building Benchmark BC. And what we did was the Integral Group did some modeling for us of what each of these changes would do. And there's quite a lot to see here. But if you look at the sort of top black line is the 2007 emissions, and you can, and the yellow line is business as usual. And you can see each of progressively, if you keep adding each of the slices of the policy we're suggesting, you get down all the way to the green line, which still isn't exactly where it needs to be, but it's a considerable distance towards the GHG reductions we're looking for here. So it's good, certainly when lobbying the government, to be able to demonstrate very clearly that the policy we're asking for is going to help achieve our goals, but also achieve their goals, their 59-63% reductions by 2030. It's only going to get part of the way there, even if it's implemented right away, but it's going to be, they're a significant part of the heavy lifting comes with these five policies. So what we did was we started approaching local governments, asking for their support. The plan was to go to local governments, ask for a resolution endorsing the work we're doing, and asking them to write letters to the relevant ministers. And we're doing this in 2020 and early 2021, and as you can imagine, it wasn't easy to get local governments to, in the middle of a pandemic where we're all fairly busy, stop and learn about five different policy pieces and then endorse them. But I'm really pleased to say that with we had a lot of support from local governments, and this is a list of the communities and organizations which stepped up to explicitly support the work we're doing at Help Cities Lead. And as you can see, it's a representation of all regions of the province here, like little places like Fernie and Kitimat, big places like Vancouver, like Victoria. So I think it's important to show this isn't just perhaps large cities on the coast who are supporting this. It's something which has traction all across British Columbia. And the endorsement of UBCM, the resolution supporting us, was part of the endorsed block in 2021, which is a great sort of shot in the arm when you're going to the province to be able to have that UBCM endorsement. So here's the progress we've had to date. And this is all outlined in much greater detail in the report back letter, which I dropped into the chat. But this gives you a sense of where things stand. So with PACE, it's kind of a good news, then not so much good news story. We're very pleased to see funding for a PACE program going into the 2020 platform for the NDP, who then got elected and then did as they said they would, which was to fund a feasibility study for PACE. That was concluded. It has not yet been made public. As a result of that and the many meetings that we had we met with the Minister of the Environment, the Minister of Municipal Affairs, the Minister responsible for housing, and the Minister for Energy and Mines. And through those meetings, and I'm sure their own work, but the collective effort resulted in PACE being included in the roadmap to 2030 as a key tool for decarbonizing buildings in the province. And, you know, that's a significant step. That's kind of the master document for the province in terms of how they're going to get to the 2030 targets they've set. The challenge, though, is that there's currently no timeline for implementation of PACE. So back in the fall, before the election, Lisa Helps and I co-authored a piece for the Times columnist asking the province to, again, pick up the that was interesting and kind of troubling in the end about Pace, which focuses a lot on heat pumps because we're talking about it. That's the real, that's where the heavy lifting gets done. Is that when I started this work in 2020, we were talking it primarily as a method of mitigation of, you know, of acting to mitigate our GHG emissions. And that was the fundamental purpose of heat pumps. And then came the heat dome of 2021. And it's tremendously tragic and just a shockingly large loss of life that occurred. I think probably most of you remember that in a period of 8 days, more than 600 people in British Columbia lost their lives due to heat. And that's just a staggeringly large figure. And just as to put it into context, that's four times as many people as lost their lives during the first 6 months of COVID-19. So you think of the measures we put into place, and I'm not questioning them, for COVID, and then in just over a week, we could lose four times that many people due to climate change. And so as a result, heat pumps are now being considered as part of mitigation. It's a very essential part of mitigation in keeping your house cool enough that you're safe in those extreme heat events that have happened and are just going to continue coming and continue become worse. So I'll just move on to the second one. Home energy labeling it also included the roadmap to 2030, which is great. The policy is in development. There's no final version yet, but we understand from meetings that the standards are being developed, but it's not something that's in place yet. And as I said, I think it'll be really important just in terms of people's awareness as they buy a home, and for the seller being able to recoup that investment they've made in GHG reductions for their homes. Regulating climate pollution standards for new buildings, that's a check mark, that's happened. The zero carbon step code is in place, or it will be in place as of May 1st, so just a couple more days to wait. Then regulating climate pollution for existing buildings, and here I think the most leverage that we're finding is being able to encourage the province to set high efficiency equipment standards for heating and cooling, and essentially that's looking for at least 100% efficiency, which is achievable only with heat pumps. And we'd like there both to be high standards, and for there to be a series of high standards which local governments are able to opt into a higher, whatever level they feel is appropriate. If you feel your community's ready and has the resource in the background to go to a higher level of GHG reduction with more efficient equipment, then you can opt into something higher, a bit like the step code. That was kind of the model that we had in mind. And Jessica McElroy and I met with the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Housing, Rolly Russell, on Monday, actually, to talk about this. And there was certainly, it's in development, and I think they were sympathetic to the to our reasoning. It certainly made sense to them. There were some concerns about affordability issues, and that's something which we're working to develop a kind of a clearer policy response when we get that pushback, to be able to just demonstrate that over the longer term, that the more efficient equipment is going to be the right move longer term. And then building energy benchmark, we actually managed to win this one ourselves. We asked a lawyer we happen to know, Don Lidstone, if he might be willing to have staff at his firm take a look and at the relevant statutes and see if building energy benchmarking actually is currently allowable, even if it's not explicitly stated. And his conclusion was that it was. We met, I'm trying to remember, the first time we brought this to cabinet, to cabinet ministers, we're talking to Minister Ralston, he just said, Minister of Energy, and he said, well, we can't give you legal advice. And we said, but it's your statutes. We just want to know if we're interpreting it correctly. And it was in a later meeting with then Minister of Municipal Affairs, Nathan Cullen, that he verbally confirmed that that is the government's understanding, that building energy benchmarking is something that can be done currently. There does not need to be a change in legislation in order to enable it. So overall, on the five asks, I think given this was all done with no staff time or staff capacity and no funding by elected officials and folks in NGOs working off the side of their desks over Zoom, I'm incredibly pleased with the result. I think it's shown real progress on each of the asks. There's still further to go, and we're going to continue lobbying. Particularly at pace, I think, is something that's just so fundamental. We just have to keep pushing to move forward with that. And in the last little while, I've spoken to a number of MLAs, and at ABICC, I got to talk to Josie Osborne, the Minister of Energy, and she suggested at UBCM that there would be a meeting convened with all relevant ministers to discuss it, and hopefully that could be a productive meeting rather than, as we all know, sometimes UBCM meetings can be more an exercise in face time, but we would like it to be a productive meeting, and we'll be sort of gearing ourselves towards making a strong presentation there.
Will,
yes?
Would you like questions to wait until you're done?
Max sure.
Has his hand up.
Sure, I think I have one more slide. I think it's
okay.
Oh, there we go. It's the slide that says I'm done. So I'll stop sharing. And if you want more information, just go to helpcitieslead.ca. That was the website there. Okay, I'm gonna.
Thank you so much.
Happy to take questions. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is time we've set aside for question and answers. You had your hand up, Max.
Yeah, it was just relevant to that slide because I wasn't very familiar or sure what building energy benchmarking meant, and thought you could give us a short definition.
Building energy benchmarking is this is for larger buildings. It's getting a measure of the efficiency of your existing stock of buildings, the efficiency and the GHG emissions of your existing stock of buildings. And it's a very basic thing. If you want to know whether you're changing something, you have to measure it in order to be able to move it. So we need to get that sort of sense of, you need to get the sense of where you are currently. And most communities don't have any figures like that on the efficiency of their buildings. And once you've got that, then you can obviously aim to improve by referring back to it and sort of tracking your reductions. So sort of essentially that's what building energy benchmarking is.
Do you have a follow-up, Max, or is that clear?
That's pretty clear. Thanks.
Yeah,
great.
And there's more about that again in the report back letter. The report back letter also has a link to Building Benchmarking BC, which is a nonprofit that's been advocating for this, and they've got like lots of useful material there.
Maybe Alex would be willing to send that out, or you will, in case people didn't get it in the chat.
Okay, sure. I can.
So, Troy.
Hi. Yes. I'm just wondering, what does regulating existing buildings look like? How do we compel existing owners to change what they're doing?
That's a good question. I mean, most of the strategies that exist out there in the world well, there are two ways of doing it. One is you can set a target that you have to hit by a certain point, and then everyone would just need to take the necessary steps to reach that. The other is that whenever a building permit comes in for a change, like you're going to be putting in new windows or you're going to be installing a new hot water system, at that point you have standards that you have to hit. See, it's either a set time with a goal, or it's ensuring that as things change, they achieve a certain standard. My sense is, I think we're probably going to see more of a standard, which is hit whenever people are putting are making changes on their buildings. I think that's probably more likely from the province, but I think New York City, one of the few jurisdictions that has just requirements by 2025, you must achieve X, and people then just have to sort of work out what combination of changes are going to be required to get themselves there.
You have a follow-up, Troy?
No, I think, I think the carrot approach is going to work much better than the stick, and I'm a bit worried that if you try and say, well, no, we're not going to let you upgrade your windows, which would be a good thing, unless you put in your heat pump, then we might just lose the upgrades of the windows, and people will say, well, no, I'm just going to suffer along with what I'm doing because of the financial. So hopefully in combination with a PACE program, if that finally comes, then we can provide enough carrots to get people to actually motivate some change.
Well, I think 100% it's a combination of these different policies, and the modeling we did was about like the interactions between them. Like PACE is great, but if you don't have PACE with home energy labeling, then people may not feel like investing, so they may not be able to recoup it. And you're going to get more retrofits if you've got PACE in place. And we're advocating for both what's called R-PACE for residential and C-PACE for commercial buildings. And, a PACE program, as we know, is just going to reduce your operating costs going forward. So if you have a low interest loan, usually the design, so the saving on your energy bills each year will cover or more than cover the cost of repayment on a low interest loan over 10 years.
Sounds like it's similar to changing to an electric car unless you're getting a Tesla.
It is, but I mean, exactly. But I mean, and the challenge, I think, is electric car, I think, is a really great analogy. The challenge there, of course, is the upfront cost. I think almost there are a lot of low-income people who would love to have an electric car because it's cheaper to operate, but the cost of actually acquiring one in the first place is just too much, even with rebates. And the same, I think, is true of heat pumps. It's that initial expense that's just too big a barrier, even though people know they're going to save in the longer term.
So the PACE would help with that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it removes the upfront cost. You borrow for the full upfront cost and then pay it back gradually over a decade with the savings. Great.
Thank you for clarifying that, Will. I have John and then Donna.
Hello, Will. One comment and then a bit of personal advocacy. I think once you get beyond hope, there's a lot of deep skepticism about heat pumps. And I see a nodding head, and in the southwest part of the province, you don't get the winters we do, and a lot of people just haven't bought into them yet. They're not confident. With regard to the personal or the advocacy, some places have experience with a concierge program, because if you want to upgrade your older home, there are grants available from BC Hydro, the province, the feds, and maybe someone else. And navigating them, finding the thing which works best for you and for your home, I think that puts off a lot of people. And with some kind of concierge program, we might get a greater uptake on some of these grants, which would be to our all of our benefits.
I'd have a couple of comments on that. I think the concierge program is a great idea, and for many local governments, it's just the challenge of funding that. And I was actually at a meeting with Dr. Jonathan Kirk, who's on the call, and some residents of Comox, like yesterday afternoon, were having exactly that discussion. And one of the things that they were going to look into at the end of the meeting, because I don't know this myself for certain, is whether the FCM funding that's available, that's being used in other places to fund PACE programs, whether that could be used to fund a concierge program, just to sort of simplify and kind of demystify the process, so people can go to one place and figure out where the best option is for them. The other hope, the other point you're making is, and I love the expression when you get beyond hope, and I hope none of us get beyond hope, even if we do go to the interior. There are better options out there. Heat pumps, the viability of them in colder weather environments are increasing all the time, and there are now specialized cold weather heat pumps, and we're going to need to see continuing not only improvements in the performance in cold weather, but an increased awareness of the performance in cold weather. And there may still be times where, like a wood stove or something, a secondary system which kicks in only when necessary, is required on those days that are, minus 25 or something like that, things that we just don't see so much in the coast. But I was just geeking out on YouTube videos about heat pumps on the weekend, because that's what I do. The cold weather equipment is really advancing quickly, and because it's clearly, the majority of the high energy consuming countries in the world tend to exist in cooler climates, like sort of Europe and North America. And so it's crucial that they be able to function better in colder weather, and that's on its way.
Okay, Alex, did you want to?
I just say one other thing on Dawn's comment. That's okay. Sorry, I know I'm just.
No, that's good.
You're watching, I happen to know that there was legislation drafted for PACE in BC. It got stalled when Cullen came in, and so it's been, it's not coming through, but it's been written, and I happen to know that it included, like, a very extensive concierge service. They're calling it, like, a white glove service, that was better and more extensive than in any other province. Like, we have it in Alberta, and it's pretty good. Like, it does help a lot. It takes everything off the municipality. It's run by the province. So BC's was going to be even better, so ideally you can have, if you can get that legislation through, then it would do everything that you would need. But there is, CEA runs this retrofit assist program, but they're doing in Rosslyn, Whistler, and Squamish, I think. I just dropped the link in the chat, but it says it was from Judy. So you might want to have a look at that, especially if you're from like a smaller community. Thanks. Sorry.
Yeah. No, thanks for mentioning that, Alex. And I have to only thank the author of that revised legislation. His name rhymes with Lidstone, so you might be able to guess who that is. But his contribution to the work has been just fantastic.
Thanks for saying that. Now, I will go to Donna, and then Sarah, and then Arjun.
Oh, that's okay.
Sarah had her hand
No, I
up.
Can go second.
You okay. Don't want your hand up?
Sarah? I can go last. I was just busy for a second.
Concierge program, I have an inquiry into Squamish because they've had it up for the longest, and I'm really curious to know how much uptake they've had on that program, and what's the level of success. Fortunately, I am not beyond hope, but I find that our median age on the Sunshine Coast is 55. And a lot of the people who need help with retrofits are older people in older housing. And they're really reluctant to take on debt, even if it's a good program. They're even very reluctant to defer their property taxes. I've heard anecdotally that the uptake on PACE programs in Canada has not been very good. Ones that have been tried. So I was just wondering if you had any comments on that.
First of all, I think it's a really interesting observation about people's personal perspectives on debt, and that's actually, to be honest, I don't like debt either, but I hadn't actually really taken that on board as a concern. Mm-hmm. That's something to think about, something we'd need to try to address in terms of people's perspectives on debt. In terms of pickup, my understanding is that the other communities in the country where programs have been introduced, in Toronto, in Edmonton, Saskatoon, Halifax, even Little Rocky Mountain House, is that the programs were fully subscribed within a very short period of time. I mean, that could speak to the fact that there wasn't very much funding in the program, and therefore it got subscribed more quickly than one would want. But the American experience, I think, speaks to the fact that it can reach hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. And one additional challenge with PACE, which I haven't brought up, is it relates to the Municipal Finance Authority. And as you probably know, if you're a local government, you want to borrow for more than 5 years, you need to borrow through MFA. You have absolutely no choice. That is who you must borrow from. And that has been a barrier to the FCM. Like, I think it's over $600 million in funding that FCM has available to back loans. And that's what has been sort of the force behind the other communities that I named, all of which don't have that particular challenge. And I think that's a new avenue for lobbying. When I mentioned that to Minister Osborne, to Josie, she actually hadn't been aware of that was a barrier. So I'm hoping that's something that we can explore. I have a colleague on my council who's just been elected the executive at MFA, and she's going to a strong advocate of PACE as well. She's going to sort of try to figure out who holds the power to change that, and what the levers might be in terms of lobbying to allow local governments in BC to access that funding, because PACE program requires long-term loans, like sort of 10 years or so is typical. Mm-hmm. And so if you can't borrow long-term from UBC, FCM, too many acronyms, then that's a real barrier to setting up the program in the first place.
Good point. So I have Arjun and then Sarah.
Hi, everybody. Thanks. It's wonderful to be back at a Climate Caucus call after quite a long time. Just a couple things. One question I had is on the PACE legislation, what ministry is it under?
It was sitting with Energy and Mines, and now I'm told that it sits with Municipal Affairs, so with Minister Kang.
Okay. There's a couple of things that I make an offer. I was on the Climate Assistance Council for the province for a couple of years, but also with my sort of work on the Low Government Leadership Academy board, still MFA and Uni, or there's sort of folks in there who we know, and a lot of this is a combination of sort of more formal lobbying and then more informal kind of communication and conversation. So I'm not a formal lobbyist anymore from that perspective, but in terms of like the informal stuff, happy to help to kind of sort of see where those things are going. I'm surprised actually that I didn't realize that PACE was kind of stalled, and that's not a good thing to hear. So I think that and the interesting thing about MFA is it's such a success story in so many other ways, for local governments in BC, but to have that be a stumbling block is good information to have, because certainly it's probably it might be easier to change that than it is to work with the province sometimes, right? So let me know how I can help with those things.
Thanks a lot, Arjun.
Thank you, Arjun. That's greatly appreciated.
Mm-hmm. So Sarah, and then Leslie, then Max. And I think we have I've got to do math before I had coffee.
About 10, 12 minutes.
And then we're going to turn it over to Alex. So let's be succinct.
I'll be as brief as I possibly can. I know I drone on sometimes. So the comments that I want to make is about the appetite for debt. That is definitely something that is not even across the board. I know that my community has a very vocal minority who is concerned about debt, even if it's sort of for our own good to keep the systems that we rely on every day keeping going, like flushing and fire service and stuff like that. But I recognize that that's coming from a place of fear, right? And I also just want to add anecdotally, because my spouse has been doing some architectural building design stuff, and so I get to listen in on some of his courses because we share an office. And the interesting thing that I've learned through his doing EA, so that's energy advisor classes, is about just like sort of what we talked about, or what was mentioned before, about how when you have an energy audit in your existing home, and it says, okay, well, you can save this much money by upgrading your windows, and you can save this much money over the long term by getting your heat pump installed. But it isn't like what was mentioned before, where like, oh, well, if you don't get a heat pump, then you don't get, it's like, it's a la carte. You get to pick which ones you're able to do first, and so then you're able to sort of figure out how to get, you know, nickel and dime your way to more energy efficient envelope of your building. I do see how that is something that is going to be more and more needed, because, you know, like every building gets older as soon as it sort of drives off the lot, so to speak. So I think I'll stop talking there. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. So, Leslie.
I'm adding to the same conversation as part of that community, definitely 55 and above. And I would reframe that from taking on debt to investing in the equity of your home. So we have a heat pump. I assure you that our heating costs are much, much lower than when we heated with gas. And if we do go to the energy benchmarking, or the mandatory home energy labeling, which I'm an incredible fan of, then when you go to sell your home, people looking at that are going to realize they have a much more valuable asset, because it's not just the I paid this much today, it's how much am I going to pay over the course of the home in heating and you know, all of those other things. Mm-hmm. So I would just say that it's just reframing that, mm-hmm. to understand. And I am in the you know, we're in Nelson, I'm in the past hope category there, but we've had a heat pump for 8 years. It is not the deep cycle heat pump, so we do have a wood stove for those three Arctic weeks that we had this year. But we will, when we switch up, we will go to one of the, I don't know if they call it a deep cycle heat pump, there's a name for it, but we could comfortably get through the winter here at a heat pump that will operate efficiently at up to minus 25 degrees.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Leslie. That's great to hear that. That's sort of validation that's the heat pumps do. And even an older one, you said yours is 8 years or so older. And I think I'll be 1 second, Kate. I think the idea of investing in the same way that like putting a new roof on your house is an investment. Yeah. When you sell your house, you can say this roof is only 2 years old, and people mentally factor that in. Yeah. But home energy labeling, I think, is a way of just making sure that people feel confident that investment is going to be seen and going to be recognized, and you're building equity in your home is what you're doing. I love that phrase, and I'll remember to use that. In the future, and as someone who's 55 plus myself, I'm sort of thinking about how to approach these issues with people of my generation.
So before we go to Max, I just want to interject and say, many of us in the over 55, and I'm the over 65, we want to have equity and as much possible value to leave to our children. My youngest is 27. So I think spinning it that way, and I recognize Sarah's in a very unique kind of situation out there in the wild.
Yes.
Anyway, but just throwing that one in. I think we might have enough time for Max and Donna, but I also want to welcome Christy May, who came in about 10 minutes ago.
Hi, Christy. Christy's a school trustee from my district. It's good to see you here today. And can I add one more thing to the comment, response to Leslie? Is Sarah put in the chat, and I think this is really important, that the heat pump will also protect you during heat domes. And the overwhelming majority of people who lost their lives in 2021 were seniors, people with limited mobility and issues, and just weren't able to find their way to cooling centers and things like that. So I think it's a way of kind of lining up the interests of older folks to make and helping to explain it in terms that are very relevant to them. So that's a great addition.
Makes a huge addition in the forest fire season as well.
Yeah,
truly. No worry, no need to apologize, Christy. Max. and Donna after that, and then I think we need to turn it to Alec.
The other thing on just on that conversation that we're having now is that in many cases, I think the loan repayment could be lower than the savings. So people are actually like paying less per month right off the bat. That doesn't feel like debt, even though it is debt. But my question is, personnel expertise is sort of a major barrier as we start to ramp up our installs of these things. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that, broadening the type of experts who can install heat pumps and increasing that flexibility, which can also bring down the costs of installation quite a bit.
I think that's a really key issue. It's like you just need to have those
the people
those,
who know.
Those skilled people. The same meeting I was at yesterday in my community, we talked to people about PACE. It was one of the actions coming out of it was to talk to North Island College, the college in our community, about the scale of the programs that they have that would equip people to do this work and whether that's something they could be scaling up. And I just quickly, there's an organization, it's an amazing organization called Iron and Earth, which exists in Alberta, and they're all about helping people exit the fossil fuel industry and use their qualifications in related fields. And I mean, I know that there's a surprising number of people who fly from where I live to Fort Mac and work there and come home. And I think like 10 out of 10 of them would love to be able to do good work in their own community. They feel great about it at the end of the day, sleep under their own roof, see their kids at dinner, all of that. And usually that choice comes with a pretty hefty pay cut that many people can't handle. And I think that getting this kind of well-paid, skilled work it's a really promising alternative in place like Iron Earth are directly trying to assist people with to be a concierge in that sense of how people transition to good well-paid work, and that could be a way of just bringing highly skilled people into this field very quickly.
Thanks for that, Will. Donna?
Totally agree with Troy. An electrician should be able to install a heat pump. It's silly that they can't. But what I wanted to say is that these problems are not targeting the people who need the renovations the most. And, like, if you're living in a 1965 mobile home, you don't give a shit about equity, especially if you're in a mobile home park, because you really don't have any. And anyway, most of these people are planning to leave their homes in a box. They don't care about resale value. So it's a really tough, I mean, I think this program will do nicely for the middle class, but it's not going to get down to the people who are the most vulnerable and need the help. Just my comment, whatever we can do to lower the barriers, make it easier, and the installation piece is a really big one.
Yeah, and you make a good point, but I also think that there's people, because I know I'm one of them, who are retired on a small CPP pension, and I have, so I'm house rich and cash poor, and I would take advantage if I had, I already have done most of the, I've done the windows and I have a heat pump, but I'm going to need a new heat pump before I die, unless I die in the next 5 years or something. So I think there's a range, and I love that you brought that up, Donna, that we have to look at a range. So I think we have time for you, John, because Alex says she only needs 1 or 2 minutes.
I'm going to be brief. I just want to check on a recent Climate Caucus meeting. We had a presentation from information from FCM, the body of the FCM that deals with green housing, etc., which is now green and affordable, which is a progress. And I guess she wanted to also talk about the funding and opportunities that are available through them. So I think it's if anyone missed that information, it's really worth checking out. And I believe the that meeting was recorded. So yeah.
Thanks for that, John. I did miss it. So any other questions or comments? I think it might be interesting for, I think Alex just put that meeting in the chat. Oh, so John, your hand is still up. Are you done?
And I will introduce our speakers. So today
Max,
we
you
have
had something
Jan
else?
Arnfield and Emily.
Yeah, if there's time for it.
Yeah.
Must have been a good talk. Got a lot of questions. I just wanted to also add that the stick part of the carrot stick thing is also a couple communication tool that I think we saw well expressed during the pandemic, that people, you know, they conceive of things differently when it's mandatory versus recommended, and the enforcement doesn't even need to matter so much. And I also wanted to add to Heathcombe's story that as a paramedic working on Cortez, it was also, you know, comparing it to the pandemic, we were always concerned about healthcare system overwhelm, but it was actually during those 8 days of the heat dome that on Cortez we had a medical emergency that was not responded to because the dispatch system was being so overwhelmed in the lower mainland. So I really appreciate you reminding us of that story, and feel free to add that later to your thing, because for me that was quite shocking.
Thank you. That's a really useful fact to be able to bring up. I think it just helps to strengthen that comparison even more. I really appreciate that, Max. Thanks.
Okay. So I'm not sure if, John, you know your hand is up still.
Put it back up.
Okay. One more run at it, John.
Okay. Just a possibility for Will, and I'm just wondering, we have 2/3 of our councils new. They've just been trying to come up to speed in a budget, all kinds of other material they have to learn. Has HCO ever considered maybe like a quarterly brief newsletter to keep people in touch and in the loop so that people see the progress is being made, and maybe if there is a sticking point, they might be informed and ready to jump in with some advocacy? Just an idea.
Yeah, I mean, quarterly...
Too much.
I'm not sure we make quite enough progress sadly to require quarterly, but I think the report back, the letter, which is in the chat and which Alex is going to send out afterwards, please, I'd say if they haven't already seen it, maybe you could forward that directly to them. And if they want to call me, to ask any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. But it provides a pretty good overview of what we've tried to do and what we've achieved over the last couple of years with this work. But more reports, I hear that more report backs would be useful. I'll definitely take that to the steering committee.
Thank you.
So I have one. I don't even know if it's a question. I just want to say I wasn't re-elected in October, and formally electeds can be a part of this, but I've been really trying to get the new chair of the Environment Committee to come. And so far, no one from North Cowichan is coming to these meetings. So it would be helpful to me to know if they're responding to you, Will. And if they're not, maybe I could just do a little call into one or two of my friends that are still there.
I didn't receive any specific response from anyone in North Cowichan to the report back letter, but maybe if you wanted to... I have to kind of trust that staff in each community, I send it to the mayor and council kind of mailbox, that staff are passing that on, and if you send it to them directly, it might stand out and give them a chance to focus on it a bit. Well, I'd be happy to talk to them as well if they have any questions.
Okay, so any last minute quick questions, or shall we turn it to Alex? We only have 2 minutes.
Go to Alex.
You had more questions you didn't have time for, Max, so... Will we have a subsequent meeting on this, do you think? Is there enough to go over this again?
I can answer that really quickly. The original STEP code didn't address GHGs because, you know, don't quote me on this, but I think Fortis didn't want it to. That's the reason. And that's why it's a big step forward. The new one does address GHGs, but I think it was probably as simple as that.
Yeah, because they're, you know, having regenerated or something. Natural gas.
Well, we can talk about the myth of renewable natural gas or supply large enough to for every new building. Which
takes
is
a long time.
Even then,
give it to Alex.
Presentation on Tuesday about it.
Excellent.
Oh, great.
From Fortis.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll ask lots of questions.
Oh, let us know what time. Yeah. Let us know what time we can watch the stream if we have time. Okay, to our wonderful Alex Lidstone, who intuitively knew something about there's legislation written. go ahead. What else are you going
to do? This British dream comes to me in a dream.
Are you right? It must be where you're living. In the walls.
Yes, okay. I think I'm supposed to be giving updates, right?
Okay, as you please.
This is perfect. So also not sure if I'm coming through as Judy or as me in your chat.
No, it's you.
For Judy and me, it's all confusing. So this is me. So in case you haven't joined the Facebook members group and you would like to, we have a group specifically for folks who are elected members to talk to each other, and I give updates in there. I'm trying to send less emails, so it might be better for you to join that if that's helpful. Next are thanks, Max. I'm me. That's good to know. The next elected's call is May 4th. It's a national call, and it's just going to be a conversation among elected officials on engaging and mobilizing community members. So we have a few folks who are elected who are going to come and talk about their experiences with that, and then there'll be more time for discussion. We have an all-caucus call at a strange time. It's May 15th, so it's not at the end of the month, it's in the middle of the month. Dawn Iveson is presenting on local resiliency. It's the beginning of our adaptation series. So if you can make it, highly would suggest that. Rural and small communities, that's a lot of you here. We have a meeting on May 25th. I believe we're going to be talking about this like local concierge program that CEA does for Rossland and Squamish and stuff. So if you're interested in that, come out. There will be more info coming once we've got some more stuff sorted. We have our communications training series. It's the next three Thursdays. Amber Bennett and Kara Pike are going to be running it from like their ReClimate program. It's going to be awesome. If you can make two but not one or whatever, they'll be recorded, but only internally. We're not going to be sharing it around because it's very workshoppy. So it's less presentations and more like hands-on learning. I think there's like two spots left. So if you want to do that, you should do that. And then, I guess none of you are from the Prairies chapter, so I won't tell you about that. I think that's everything. So... yeah. Oh, shoot. I took an extra minute. I'm sorry.
Oh, well. We love you, so we let anything like that go. All right. So it was great to meet. It was a very lively conversation. Max is even clapping.
Thanks. It was great. It was a great discussion.
You don't get that often. Yeah. I mean, you probably do, but locally elected people often don't. So, I guess Alex will let you know when this chapter's meeting next after the steering committee has decided that and what the topic will be. So have a great weekend where I am. It's beautiful and warm and sunny. It's almost hard to believe, and I hope it's true for where you are too.
Mm. Thanks for sharing, Kate.
Yeah, yep, thank no problem. You.
Thanks, Kate.
See you later, friends. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a good afternoon, everyone.
Nice to see you all.
Thank you again, Will.
Bye-bye. Already in there. Okay, so that was Climate Caucus meeting, and you're listening to the Green Antler Waterfowler. My name is Sarah Fowler, and yeah, I love the Climate Caucus. It's got so much happening. I'll just read this. BC municipalities and buildings. This month, we will be talking about all things related to buildings. We will hear from councillors Will Cole Hamilton and Jessica McElroy, who have led our Help Cities Lead campaign. They'll be talking about what the campaign is, what the effort has asked for so far, what has been achieved to date, and what we'll focus on for the future. There will also be an opportunity to provide input on what Help Cities Lead could work on. One of the Help Cities Lead's asks was for carbon pollution standards, so there will also be time to discuss the new zero carbon step code. So that is awesome, and Will did really great about educating us about what it has accomplished so far, and also what we can look forward to with respect to what will come next.